Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the gyps in the PC. It is Saturday, the 26th day of November, Anno Domini 2022, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. All right. In this next story, as always, we will replace the name of Amazon's voice assistant with Alaska to prevent triggering it. Thank you, Dennis Worcester, and you're welcome, everybody listening. Amazon is going through the biggest layoffs in the company's history right now with a plan to eliminate some 10,000 jobs. One of the areas hit hardest is the Amazon Alaska Voice Assistance Unit, which is apparently falling out of favor at the e-commerce giant. Alaska has been around for 10 years and has been a trailblazing voice assistant that was copied quite a bit by Google and Apple and Samsung and name it. Alaska never managed to create an ongoing revenue stream, though, so Alaska doesn't really make any money. Apparently, the hardware team is on pace to lose $10 billion this year. A report says that while Alaska's Echo line is among the best-selling items on Amazon, most of the devices sold at cost. One internal document describes the business model by saying, "We want to make money when people use our devices, not when they buy our devices." That plan never really materialized, though. It's not like Alaska plays ad breaks after you use it. The temperature is 32 degrees. This temperature brought to you by Kohl's Department Store.
Shut up. They're going to hear you.
Right. It's not like Alaska plays ad breaks after you use it. So the hope was that people would buy things on Amazon via their voice. Not many people want to trust an AI with spending their money or buying an item without seeing a picture or reading reviews. And there's all those horror stories of kids buying $10,000 dollhouses and things like that. Amazon tried to partner with companies for Alaska's skills so a voice command could buy a Domino's pizza or call an Uber and Amazon would get a kickback. And, of course, they're selling celebrity voices like Samuel L. Jackson. The report says by 2020, the team stopped posting sales targets because of the lack of use. So is time running out for the big tech voice assistants? Everyone seems to be struggling with them. Google expressed basically identical problems with Google Assistant business model last month. There's an inability to monetize the simple voice commands most consumers actually want to make, and all of Google's attempts to monetize assistants with display ads and company partnerships haven't worked. With the product sucking up server time and being a big money loser, Google responded just like like Amazon by cutting resources to the division. Siri can at least be a loss leader for iPhone sales, but Apple is also hunting around for more continual revenue from ads. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google, voice assistants are colossal failures. And your choices are, no, I love mine. I use a voice assistant pretty regularly. I use mine occasionally. I have one around here somewhere. I'll never buy one. And, of course, other. You can vote in our poll at soundbites.org. Again, bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Also, if you have more to say or if you picked other, you can tell us what you wanted to say in our forums. If you go to soundbites.org, scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 26 Nov 22. Voice assistants are colossal failures. And so what's your favorite voice assistant? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. toll free 1-800-790-0415.
It's called a wife, and she says, honey, you need to do this. It's honey, you need to do that.
Right. She's the reminder.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I admit, I use mine all the time, and so does my wife. But we use them more for timers and reminders.
Yeah, didn't they say the number one request is set a timer, and the number two request is what's the weather?
Yeah, exactly.
Neither of which makes them any money.
Neither of which makes them any money. And that's the problem. It's not that they aren't really useful, and it's not that they aren't really used. The problem is their money sinks.
Yeah.
You know, every time you do one of those requests, whether it's for the time or the temperature or center reminder, whatever it is, it takes resources on the server, and it takes, therefore, and there's billions of those constantly. And so it also takes people to maintain and upgrade and manage those servers. And all of that is a money sink. And so that's what these companies are all having a struggle with. They can't figure out how to monetize that and turn it into a profit center rather than a cost center. And until they figure that out, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, like I said, Apple with Siri, that controls a lot of the phone thing, so it can remain a loss leader.
Yeah,
for Apple. For Google, you have Google Assistant on your phone, and a lot of people use it there to do things.
Oh, I use that all the time.
So it is possible that that would still be around. But for the Amazon devices, they have no path at all to make. That's why all of these companies came out with devices that had a screen, because they can show ads on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
But people aren't buying those.
Yep.
Even the ones without a camera, people aren't buying many of them. So we'll see what happens in the future. But right now, it does not look good for those things. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Chris from Brockport, New York. What's up, Chris?
Yes. Hi there. Thanks for helping out, hopefully, with this question.
Sure.
I have two older laptops, and they're both Lenovo's. One is a T64, maybe, but I may be getting that wrong. One has an i7 processor, you know, so they were at the time top of the line or close to it.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, like, they went kind of squirrely, like something with, like, it kept getting a blue screen on one and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I know you've talked about this before, but is there anything I can do to rehab these to use Linux or?
Yes.
I don't.
Sorry. Sorry. I got a little overeager there. I apologize.
No problem.
All right. So there are two things you could do to this. One is you could put Linux on them. The other is you could put Chrome OS Flex on them. And so that depends on. Yes.
I was going to just interrupt you for a second. What is it that she wants to do with them? Because then that would be
right.
Determined.
Well, she said, can I put Linux on them?
Yeah. But I mean, if you go, whether you go a Chrome type of thing versus Linux, if they're just going to be surfing the internet and email and all that, a Chrome direction would be.
Sure. So what is it you want to do with them?
That's a great question. So we have a teenage son, so I would like to have one that he can use for, like, Excel and word processing. You know, he has an iPad from school that he can use for email and stuff, but no gaming, no videos. You know, it doesn't have to be anything, you know, way out there.
Okay, so let's talk about the differences between Linux and the Chrome OS Flex. Linux is essentially a full operating system like Windows is. So you can do anything. You do it with different programs, but you can do anything. So there is, for example, an office suite called LibreOffice, L-I-B-R-E, that is free and comes with Linux. And it has a word processor and a spreadsheet and a PowerPoint type program and all of that stuff that are also free and will also read and write Word document, any Office document.
Okay.
So it'll read Word and Excel and PowerPoint files and write them if you needed to. So you can create a full-fledged but completely free system using Linux. And I know that works. I've been a Linux user for 30 years. My desktop is Linux. My laptop is Linux. And I've been using it. When I was working, I traded Office files with people for 20 years, and they never knew I wasn't using Office. So that all works great. And it does everything. So you can surf the web and you can watch YouTube videos and play games and anything you want to do on a Linux system.
All right.
And Linux is as easy as downloading a version from the web. And again, most Linuxes are free, so you can download them and install them without paying anybody anything ever, and run it on any machine you like. Now, on an i7, believe me, Linux will run great.
Yeah, it'll run screamer.
It'll run great. The other choice is to essentially turn it into a Chromebook. And that would use Chrome OS Flex.
Okay.
That, again, is free, is downloadable from the internet, install it on any machine you like. It is less mature than Linux, so there are some machines it doesn't yet run tremendously well on, although Lenovo, I believe, is definitely on their list as running mm-hmm. well.
Yeah. I would say it's putting Chrome on it would make it a little more like the iPad, where it's most a web browser and then specific apps that Chrome has.
Right.
And putting Linux on it is more like Windows, where you can pretty much anything you want, and any OS you want. It'd be a little trickier putting Linux on it and learning Linux.
Right. Yeah, in either case, you're going to have to learn a new operating system.
Yeah, the learning curve of Chrome is probably a little shorter
that's kind
than
of
Linux.
Less.
Right, right. So either one.
So put one of each. You've got two laptops. Put one of each and see which one you like.
Right. On the more powerful one, put Linux. On the less powerful
try
one,
try them
put
both
Chrome
out like. And see which one you like.
And again, because they're both free and you can do anything you want with them, you could try them. If you don't like them, put the other one on. Easy enough.
And we have links on our website. If you search for Chrome Flex, you'll see a bunch of different links on how to download and install Chrome. Basically, well, in both cases, you get a flash drive. So get two flash drives, one for Chrome, one for Linux.
Right.
And you download the installer on that flash drive and then reboot the machine from the flash drive and install the new OS.
Okay. That's so wonderful ideas. Now, my husband, who is familiar with Linux and you know, has used it previously and loves it, he is telling me that there's a motherboard issue and it isn't worthwhile to replace the motherboard to put these, like, Linux on it. Like, one of the issues with one of them was, like I said, I think it got too hot and it would go to a blue screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the other one, like I would be using Word or Excel and all of a sudden it would just like erase erratically, you know, kind of a thing. So it's not a memory issue. I think it's something with, you know, I don't know.
Could be an overheating issue.
Yeah.
And your husband would be right, because to take one of these either one of those laptops apart, one, you're not going to probably find a replacement motherboard, and they are the biggest pain in the neck.
And the biggest expense of the laptop.
Yeah. To take one of those out, swap it out, or even fix it, it just becomes a good paperweight.
Yeah, the problem with hardware issues is that software can't fix them.
If it is a overheating issue, one of the things you may be able to do, again, depending on how easy it is to get open, is blow the dust out of the fans. Make sure the fans are working. And if you like tinkering, remove the heat sink and reapply the thermal paste. I just did that to a computer this morning.
Check the fan to make sure that it's even spinning.
Yeah, make sure the fan is spinning.
Some of those, the older ones, they seize up and then, you know, they're there, but they're not turning and keeping things
cool. Or a wire
cool.
got stuck in the fan blades the last time you were in there doing something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. So I guess worst come to worst, I could always try to put the new operating system on and just see if it works, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Nothing,
but if you're having hardware issues, the first thing to do is to blow out the dust from the fan.
Yep.
And see that it's spinning. Or, you know, one of the things that I did with an old laptop was that the fan stopped working on is I propped it up. I used a cookie pan and had a fan blowing behind it and under it, and that kept it cool enough to run.
Uh-huh.
But, again, that depends entirely on what the hardware issue is and yep. et cetera, et cetera. So, but the other thing is that in general, Chrome OS Flex doesn't stress the hardware very much at all. And Linux also stresses it generally less than Windows. If it's a borderline issue, you may be able to get away with either of those rather than Windows.
Okay. I definitely want to try this. Now, if you don't mind, my last question is, do I have to erase the whole hard drive and everything, or when I install the new system, will it just erase everything automatically?
It will erase everything automatically, so make sure you have everything backed up that you want to keep.
There are ways to dual boot, but that's much more complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah. What'll happen is when you install it, you'll have a choice between dual booting and erasing the whole hard drive. You're much better off erasing the whole hard drive, particularly if Windows itself is having issues.
Okay. All right. Well, I will give it a try, and I'll report back.
Excellent. Let us know.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
You too, Chris. Thanks. Oh, on the YouTube chat, Mark is listening to us using his Alaska. From Justin, Texas, the great state of Texas. You can listen as it says on our website, again at soundbites.org. You can ask either Alaska or Google to play Jazz 901 on TuneIn, and indeed it will. So you can listen via that or via the web or live or on your phone through the Jazz 90.1 app. In fact, it's hard not to listen. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Wayne from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Wayne, what's up?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for helping me out before. I do have my home directory all backed up.
Good.
I installed Mint. That went well.
Good.
But now what I'm trying to do is get the home directory from that flash drive into my home directory. And I was given a command line to use, and it was /media/mint/UUID, the UUID for that flash drive, and my home-tar.bz2. It doesn't like it. It rejects it. And I've also tried and place a Mint SDB. I've also done SDB1 to no avail.
All right. The first thing you need to do is go to a command line.
Yes.
And go into your home directory.
Yes.
And type PWD for print working directory.
Okay.
And that will tell you where your home directory is.
Okay.
That's the thing you use on the command line. The second thing is when you copied your home directory over to your flash drive, Did you tar it up or did you just copy it?
I use tar.
Okay. Then, yes, you do want to use tar to move it over.
So tar recognizes it's already tarred and doesn't untar? Or is there...
No, he needs to use untar.
Okay.
But two things. Depending on which version of Linux you're running, and I don't remember whether Mint does this or not.
Well, it's 20.3.
Honestly, I don't remember.
Okay.
But what it might be trying to do is to untar the tar on the flash drive, and the flash drive simply doesn't have enough room. So what you should do is copy the tar over to your hard drive and untar it from there.
Down in like the download folder.
Any folder you want, or even into the home folder.
Yeah.
So it'll still work. You can just say untar here, you know, untar dot, and it'll untar it to that place.
But there should be a way to untar it from the flash drive to the hard drive.
Yes, but it depends.
But it's trickier?
Well, no, the point is it depends on which version of tar you're using as to whether it's trying to untar it on the source and move it over to the
destination. Yeah.
And so it might not have enough room on the flash drive to do that.
Yeah.
Whereas if he pulls the whole tar ball over and untars it from the hard drive, he's got plenty of room.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this then. I've also heard that if you go to drag and drop it, I could drag and drop it to the home directory, but I heard that from time to time you wind up losing information when you do that. Is that true?
I have never lost information doing that.
But have a backup just in case.
Well, you still got it on the hard drive.
Yeah,
you're dragging and dropping, not moving. And you don't want to ever move. You want to copy. So you could, if it's a single tar ball.
Yes.
Pull it on over to the hard drive in any directory you like. I don't care.
Okay.
And then you can do the untar whatever, slash home slash mint slash whatever the PWD says. And it should then go there. It should untar it to there. The other thing is, once it's over on your hard drive,
yes,
you should be able to double-click on it, and it should open your archive program. And now you can drag and drop out of the archive program into your home directory using a GUI instead of command line.
I see.
But again, you want it over on the hard drive first because it's going to use a lot of temp files that may not fit on the thumb drive.
And was the file already also compressed before it was tarred?
It was tarred and compressed at the same time.
So you have to decompress it, then untar it.
Well, the program should do that for him. The GUI program should do that. So once he's pulled it over onto the hard drive, again, in your download directory, your temp directory, wherever, you should be able to double-click on it, and the archive program figures out what you did and undoes it.
And then you tell it where to put the results?
What it really is doing is it's just pulling the directory.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that, you can do whatever you need to do. And it does it all in the background. So there is a GUI for the archiving program. You just have to have enough empty space on the device to deal with that. And it's easier to do that on your hard drive than on the thumb drive.
Okay, because I think I've got enough room on the hard drive anyways. Because I'm using up about 17.5 gigs, and it's a 64 gig hard drive.
Yeah. So you've got plenty of room, so you should be able to pull that over and do whatever you need to do.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, guys.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we are solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in just a couple of minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Google has released an emergency security update for the desktop version of the Chrome web browser, addressing the 8th zero-day vulnerability exploited into text this year. Only 8 in a year, that's not bad. You get those every month, and never mind. The high-severity flaw is a heap buffer overflow. Everything's a heap buffer overflow. Can't these people write... Never mind. In the GPU discovered by Clement Clement, of Google's threat analysis group back on November 22nd. So they jumped right on this. Google is aware that an exploit exists in the wild, reads the update notice. As users need time to apply the security update on their Chrome installations, Google has withheld details of the vulnerability to prevent expanding its malicious exploitation. In general, heap buffer overflow is a memory vulnerability resulting in data being written to forbidden, usually adjacent locations without any sort of check. Attackers may use heap buffer overflow to overwrite an application's memory to manipulate its execution path, resulting in unrestricted information access or arbitrary code execution. Chrome users are recommended to upgrade to version 107.0.5304.121 or 122 for Windows and .122 for Mac and Linux. To update Chrome, head to Settings. This is in Chrome, of course. Settings, About Chrome, and then wait for the download for the current version to finish, or you can click the Get a Download button. And then restart the program, and you should be fine. All Chrome users are strongly advised to update their web browsers as soon as possible to block potential exploitation attempts. Are you up to date? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
I had an issue with Chrome just the past couple of weeks. I wound up taking this laptop and just wiping it off again because...
Just Chrome OS or...
Yeah, Chrome. And it kept getting this darn website. Every time I opened up the browser, it kept putting this nagging ad that you need McAfee antivirus. You need Norton. And... I said, okay, well, I went to the website to see how to get rid of it. And no matter what I did, it did not want to get rid of that darn...
Yeah, I've been getting that, too, and I've got no extensions involved.
Yeah,
I've got,
same here.
Nothing weird loaded into Chrome. It's
so I said the heck
somewhere.
With it, and I just wiped it all over again because not much on it because I use Google.
Well, if you're using Chrome OS, one of the things you can do is wipe it back to as if it were a brand new machine.
Factory reset.
It's a factory reset, and that gets rid of everything.
Yep, that's what
And
I
then
did.
When you log back in again, if, as Dave is doing, you're using all of Google's own products, all of them are saved as part of your... email address.
Yep.
So when you log in with the same email address you were using, everything comes back.
Yeah,
all
same
your
accounts.
Apps, all the only thing that doesn't come back is any files you have saved direct to the hard drive. So you would want to copy those out first.
Right. Everything else is up to the hard drive, the cloud.
Yep.
I mean, even all my tabs on Chrome were there.
Yep.
I hadn't set much up on it anyways, but it was just annoying because I had just gotten it pretty well situated, and then all of a sudden this stupid ad keeps popping up.
Yep.
So I was, for over a week, trying to get rid of it. I was running Malwarebytes, Super Anti-Spyware, AVG. None of them were finding it. I even went in, like Steve was saying, into the extensions. To see if anything in...
You were running Malwarebytes on a Chrome OS?
I also had it on another one, too.
But because certainly weren't running
any of those things on the Chromebook. I had it on two. I should have clarified. I wound up having it on two. I'm sorry. But on the Chromebook is where it first started. And then, like I say, I wound up getting it on this other one. The other one, I'm not even...
The thing that I started getting... that I kind of think it was a notification when, as part of the security Chrome has and the Mac OS has, most websites will try to send you notifications of something, which isn't a new web page window popping up like a regular ad. And it was coming in as a notification of, here, you should buy, you know, update your McAfee. So I had to go in and disable notifications for Chrome, and that helped.
Yeah,
something similar happened a couple of years ago in calendar invites, that if you make a calendar event on Google, you know, Microsoft, Apple, you can invite other people by their email address.
Right.
Well, there's billions of email addresses available for free to spam, right. And so people were sending spam calendar invite messages. So you get an invitation to a calendar event, but it was the content was, you know, spam,
right,
drugs or mortgages or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I wound up, like I say, with it on this other desktop unit, which is, matter of fact, it's an old Pentium 3. So I really did.
That's the one you should be running Flex on.
Yeah, well, I'm playing around with these, you know. And like I say, I thought, okay, well, like you said, you can't run super anti-spy malware bytes and all that on the Chromebook, but I could do it on this one.
Right, sure.
So I wanted to get it up and see, but not even any of the things that they were saying were working. So that's why I say the Chromebook, I just said, the heck with it, put it back to factory, good there. The other Pentium 3, yeah, if I get to it, I get to it. If not, oh, well.
Yeah.
It was just something, you know, I was trying to figure out. And because a lot of other folks were getting frustrated at the same issue that, right. You know, no matter what they said to do, it was not getting rid of it.
Interesting. I haven't seen any of that yet, but.
Yeah.
Well, you've got your uBlock Origin and other blockers turned on, right?
Right.
I had those in running in my Chrome, too. And I think that's why they're coming up with new ways to send you a notification now that isn't blocked. Right. Yeah.
Playing the game, like we've said for decades, even with viruses, it's a game of leapfrog. You know, they find a way to get around it, and then you put up a barrier to get blocked that, and then they leapfrog over that one to go to the next one.
Yep, that's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works.
Well, that's why we can't, you know, stress enough that folks have to keep their stuff up to date as far as the antivirus, the super, you know, super anti-spyware, the malware bytes, and their virus programs. And
I think there was a new bad guy that came online in the last couple of weeks, because we've gotten dozens of new phone calls from people who've gotten the same infection virus, and your computer's locked, and call this phone number, and coming from a bunch of different sources. One of them was I'm guessing, compromised Amazon Web Services account. Another one came from Molly.
Molly, nice.
.ml. I hadn't seen a .ml for a while. But yeah, we've been getting a lot on uptake in calls. So somebody new must have come online.
Yeah. One of the things, speaking of updating, I got a call from a friend of mine. My Linux, you told me I could put Linux on my machine and it would be better for me, but I'm getting updates all the time. Okay. Yes. You're getting updates all the time, but in two clicks, you're done. You don't have to reboot. You don't even have to pay attention to the update.
Yeah.
You can go do something else.
And that's why it's better, because you get updates all the time.
You get updates all the time. That's the point.
Yeah.
You get updates all the time that work. In fact, my Chrome browser updated just the other day with this update, and I did have to close out my Chrome browser. If you're going to update Chrome, you have to close out Chrome first. But I closed out Chrome. I clicked OK.
Did that take all of 10 seconds?
It took all of 10 seconds. I clicked OK again, started up Chrome, and I had the new thing. It was literally two clicks. It's not that hard to do.
Everybody wants instant gratification.
Yeah, instant gratification isn't fast enough anymore.
Yeah.
In the YouTube chat, Frederick says Chrome browser doesn't display websites in dark mode. Actually, mine does just fine. I don't know what site you're talking about. It may be a specific site that doesn't work,
Dude,
but I go
mode.
To any number of websites where they have dark mode, and all of them are fine. I've been playing around in Counter Social for a while, and that has a dark mode. Mastodon has a dark mode. Lots of places have dark modes, and everyone I've tried works. Again, depending on where you're going, you may not get it, but I don't know what to tell you. If you're getting it in one and not getting it in the other, it's likely the programmers.
One thing, I don't think you had it as one of the stories, though, and a number of folks were wondering about it, is Twitter. Whether Elon Musk is the fork
down in flames.
Yeah, bought it just to slowly, maybe declare bankruptcy.
How can you want to lose $45 billion?
Well, here's the thing.
He's lost all his advertisers.
He's lost well over half his advertisers anyway. And here's the thing. He wanted to buy Twitter because it was, I don't know, he had a bug.
He claimed it was full of bots and he could clean it up. He's the only one that knew how.
Well, here's the problem, though. It was full of bots and it was a problem, but there were a whole lot of people who were handling that problem.
Yep.
Yeah.
And when he bought it, he fired them all.
Yeah, I read that he fired based on how many lines of code you've written today.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're the one guy that stared at a whole page of code and fixed one line,
right,
you got fired because you only did one line that day, even though you're the best debugger there.
Well, right. Then also his ultimatum when he gave folks one day to either you're going to do it this way or walk out the door. Most of them, I don't think he thought that they were going to take him up on it, walked out the door.
Right.
Yeah.
And so he's... I, who knows what he wants or what he's doing or what he thinks he's doing.
Yeah, but $45 billion,
and
it is bleeding so bad.
Yep.
Not enough tourniquets around to shut off all the bleeding.
Well, and because he's reinstated some of the people he's reinstated, there are a lot of advertisers who are unhappy with that because they don't want to be associated with that. They don't want, your political bent, I don't care. But there are a lot of advertisers who don't want to be seen next to one of those posts.
Mm-hmm.
So they have stopped being advertisers, and that is their right.
And
they have absolutely got the right to do that.
I've suddenly started seeing more porn suggestions in my Twitter feed.
Yes.
I never post and I rarely read, but I'm getting these. They turned on some, here's a new digest email service for you.
Right.
And this isn't even obscured porn. And I didn't think Twitter allowed that anyway.
Twitter allows everything now.
Yeah.
There isn't anybody to stop it anymore. He turned off all the filters. And so they're seeing that. And that's part of it too. There are a whole lot of advertisers who don't want you to be looking at porn here. Yeah. And their ad right next to it.
Yeah.
They simply don't want that.
Yeah, I get my astronomy picture of the day, porn. Elon Musk said this crazy thing.
Yep. So a lot of people are moving to other platforms.
What is it, Meta or Mastodon?
No, Meta is Facebook.
Yeah,
Mastodon is one.
Mastodon, that's it.
But the one that I'm enjoying more is called Counter.social. That's the email, that's the URL. Counter.social. And I like it better because the guy who runs it, I don't know that he's got to be a robot himself. He's some sort of alien. He never sleeps. He and his people are getting rid of all the bots and all the idiots. And it's just a very quiet, calm, pleasant place.
An intelligent place to be.
And I like it a lot. Anyway, to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. What's up, Tom?
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. I've got a few questions. But first on this Musk thing with Twitter, I've never used Twitter. Never used it in my life.
Yep. Same here.
I know it's about, but I can't understand a fellow like him. He's clearly a great engineer. There's no question.
No, he isn't. What has he built?
He buys things.
What has he built? He bought Tesla.
He seems to be involved in at least three major startups.
Bought Tesla. He bought SpaceX.
Yes.
And he bought Twitter. Now, he has never developed anything himself. He has no technical skill.
He's a businessman.
If you're right about that, and you might be right, I'm not going to rule it out, then that only speaks to his acumen as an investor and not as an engineer. But I always assume that he was somehow involved with the engineering in these things, like this Tesla.
No, untrue.
Well, then let's get rid of them. Okay, let's get to my question, please. I got two things. Number one is I've been getting a lot of these digital ads lately from a company called Guard.io, which I believe is a malware, you know, product to get rid of malware.
Sure.
Do you know about it? Is it a valid?
I have not really looked into that myself. I don't know much about it. It does seem to. I'm looking at.
It's a secure digital wallet.
Yeah, and it does have a fairly decent.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you need a digital wallet to put your Bitcoin and Ethereum in,
right,
that might be a legitimate one.
Yeah, I don't need that. Okay, I was wondering if you. It seems to be very ubiquitous lately on my as I surf the web. It comes up constantly.
Yeah, a lot of places are buying ads right now. What with the holiday season coming along, so you're bound to see a lot of them, particularly depending on where you go.
Yeah. Okay. All right. My second question is it's this: I get a lot of. I contribute to a great many charities. I'm glad to do it, but lately I've been getting emails from them requesting, you know, more donations, but literally. Every day,
yeah.
Sometimes from the same one. I would like to just pare it down. Let's say once a week, once every 2 weeks, and I find it very difficult to get through to them, to email them and contact them. That they better cut this out, otherwise I'll have to cut them loose.
There are a couple of things you can take a look at. Legally, every organization of any sort that sends out emails. Needs an unsubscribe button at the bottom. And often...
I don't want to unsubscribe.
Often that unsubscribe button leads you to a page that says, I want a weekly digest, I don't want to see these anymore, send me these
Give
less
me options.
Often, whatever.
Right.
So you can certainly try that, because if you hit the unsubscribe button and it says, would you like to unsubscribe, just say no.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, but the thing is, you can try that legally. Well, if they're an American company or a European
company,
business in America, they are legally obliged to have some sort of unsubscribe thing available.
And legitimate companies will honor that.
Right.
The problem is there's unsubscribe buttons on the spam and fake emails.
Right.
Never click those, because then the bad guys know you click on it and add you to more lists.
Right. But in your case, if these emails are coming from charities that you know are legitimate and to whom you already donate, take a look at that bottom, and it might be an unsubscribe or change your preferences or whatever they might call it.
Yeah. What I've done, Tom, just to help out, I've created a list, a couple of the charities that I, you know, like giving to, like you. But, you know, like you say, right now during the holidays, they're inundating, you know, and it seems like it's getting out to other places, too. So when these others come in, and even if that organization gets too ambitious and constantly hitting, I mark it as spam. Have it automatically go right to my spam bucket and just forget about it. I've got the list of folks written down that I want to give to, and when the time is right and I want to do it, because I know when I got to renew stuff, I call them or I contact them. I don't want them always nagging me, so I just mark it as spam. Boom, goes to the spam folder. I don't see that email anymore.
It always feels like the charities pass your name around to other charities.
Yep.
He donated to me. Maybe he'll donate to you, too.
One thing I do.
I don't know if they do or not, but it feels like it.
Yeah.
One thing I do is both my own email addresses at my website, but also my Gmail account has what's called plus addressing. So let's say you've got tom@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
If you sign on to, say, St. Jude's Hospital, and you donate money to them, you can put your email address as tom+jude@gmail.com. The mail will still come to you at tom@gmail.com, but it will come to tom+jude. So now you can filter by Tom plus Jude.
I see, yeah.
But also, you can see who sold your email address.
Yeah, this is the symbol plus, right?
The symbol plus, right.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Tom, the cross, Jude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
That would work, yeah.
Yeah, and so, obviously, it's not going to help you with the ones you've already done unless you can change your email address with them. But for everybody listening out there, Gmail and a number of others have a plus addressing feature. So you can say whatever your Gmail account is, plus something else at gmail.com. And so I do that for kind of everything. Amazon thinks I'm whatever my name is, plus Amazon at gmail.com. So I know when they've sold my address. I do it for everybody.
It's a serious problem because it taxes me in a material way. I mean, this is not a trivial thing. It's
like exactly.
And you get so annoyed, you're
going to...
Yeah, and you get so annoyed and frustrated, you're going to stop donating to them.
Right.
So it's in their best interest to stop doing that.
And I do have filters for these things, and you're right. I mostly leave them turned off because most of the year it's not a problem. But come September, October, I turn them on, and then they all just go to trash. I never see them.
Right. I've got a similar problem on the snail mail side of things, too. I get inundated.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing.
And sometimes it's the same reason that the company bought two mailing lists and you were on each one and they didn't clean the addresses. And so now you're getting email and postal mail from both of those lists they bought.
And the
they
way
should
I
subscribe to a postal service.
The way I solve that is I live in a house. I own the home. But I put in an apartment number.
Ah.
And each apartment number is a different company that I do business with. So I know if they sold my list.
Yep.
And then I stop doing business with them.
Cool. Yep.
Yeah, good idea. Yeah. All right, guys. Now that we're in the holiday season, we should try to stay in the spirit of charity when it's
worth. I agree. I agree. I do give. But I've also found recently that on Twitter and on Mastodon and on Counter Social, I'm getting a lot of, can you send us money for our dog or our cat or our bird or whatever it all is. And I don't know how many of those are legit or how many of those are, you know, I admit to being a cynic. I certainly donate to large corporations I know are legitimate. Also, a lot of people, you know, their birthday thing is donate to this. Well, I will donate to that thing, but not through Facebook, because I know Facebook takes some of that money.
At most, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't intend to give Facebook any money. So, you know, if somebody says, give money to the Red Cross, I'll send money to the Red Cross for them.
Go to their website.
Through the website, not through Facebook. Yeah, absolutely. All right.
All right. In spite of everything, happy holidays.
Yeah, same to you, Tom. Have fun. All right. That music tells us that you have wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But do not despair. There's another hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. Holy cow, that sounds like it must be Soundbites. Right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1, you'll get a whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, and a whole nother hour of Nick Francesco. So take a quick bio break, I know I'm going to, and then come back for a whole lot more of us. And don't forget, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we will be right back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. It's 59 minutes after the hour. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And on the Jazz 90.1 app, and on the web at jazz901.org, and on Twitch, and on YouTube, and
on
Facebook.
Place.
That, like I said, it's hard to not get us.
No matter how hard you try, we're still there.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're following you around. We're knocking on your door. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Bill did from Rochester, New York. What's up, Bill?
Hi, how you doing today?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm doing good. In the past, I've enjoyed watching a website that streams NHL hockey games for free. But now, in order to watch it, they require a VPN. And I know virtually nothing about VPNs. What can you tell me about it?
Okay, a VPN is a virtual private network.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea behind a VPN is that it, well, there are a lot of things that it does. But go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I want to back up a step. The reason they're requiring a VPN is so that they can break copyright law and not know that you shouldn't be watching this illegal stream.
Right.
Yeah.
And VPNs are a way to do that.
Yeah. They've been streaming the games, I'm sure, without doing proper licensing for it.
Right. And so the idea behind a VPN is that it hides your address.
Mm-hmm.
Every person has an individual address on the internet. Your home, for example, if you have fiber or cable or whatever coming into your home, you have one address on the internet. But it is your individual address.
And that address has a geolocation.
And has geolocation, so people know where you are. The thing about a VPN is it hides that. So all of your data go through the VPN and out of the VPN to the other site, and then the data comes back to the VPN and through the VPN to you. So the VPN is kind of a cutout. The question is always, who's running that cutout?
Right.
And what are they doing with your data? I don't trust anybody ever. I'm a cynic. I admit it.
Uh-huh.
But if you want to use a VPN, there are a million free ones and there are a million paid ones.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the free ones is that they are horribly overloaded. You will run real slow on a free VPN.
Yeah.
Most of the pay VPNs are less full, and so you'll run less slow. Not that you'll run at your normal speed, but you'll run less slow.
Yeah, and that wouldn't be ideal for watching a sporting event.
Right, right. I know people do it. I have a friend who is British, and he uses a VPN to watch cricket, which is so slow it doesn't matter. Sorry for anybody who actually likes cricket. I had a friend who tried to explain cricket to me, and I swear to you, she made up
every rule?
Every rule and names. He threw a googly. That cannot be a real thing. At any rate, the point I'm trying to make is it is slower, but it will let you see things that would be blocked out in your area. Now, as to whether that's illegal, well, look, whatever you do in the privacy of your own home is between you and your adult computer. I can't help you with that. But
and many of the security companies, antivirus type companies, also have VPN services as well. I just found an article from CNET on among the best paid VPN services, and three of them I've already heard of. You could also, as Opera still includes...
I was just about to say.
Yeah, Opera has a VPN built in. And so instead of the other end knowing you're in New York, you can have your VPN come out in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Or England.
Or England, yeah.
Right, so you can use Opera as your browser, and then... In the settings, you can activate the free VPN, and you can even tell it what country to come from. But again, it is not going to be fast. A VPN is useful in certain circumstances. So, for example, Steve is talking about putting a VPN in his company, and that is so that when he is not at his company, he can log in, and it looks like he is in his company.
Mm-hmm.
And that VPN is private to his company and only lets him into his company with all the safeguards of passwords and everything else that you put in. VPN that lets you surf the internet anonymously is going to make your system slower.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way around that. Now, I could suggest you try Opera and see what happens. I won't promise the result is usable, but I also, you know, I also can't help you if it isn't. There's no magic there.
The only other question I had would be is how you operate it. Would this be something that I could switch on and off on demand? Because pretty much it would be used for only watching these hockey game sites.
Well, that's why I would say use Opera.
Mm-hmm.
Only for those sites.
And yes, you turn it on and off when you want to.
You can turn it on and off when you want to, but if you aren't using Opera, it's off. So you could use Chrome or Firefox
for your regular use,
and then Opera for watching the illegal hockey games.
Yes. Okay, well, that seems to do it. I mean, I was just looking for a solution to get back onto this free network because the many games are broadcast through cable networks or other streaming services, but the price is a little bit more than I want to pay.
Right. And okay, I should put out the disclaimer that we at Soundbites do not approve of nor condone stealing anything ever from anybody ever, including data streams. All right.
Absolutely. Great. Well, thanks very much. That helps very much.
Bye-bye.
We've seen some places start doing watch parties where someone will point their camera at the television and then get all their friends on a Zoom call.
Yep. Yes, and you can, I know on Mastermind Lounge, you can stream a screen, and on that screen you could be playing the thing, and then everybody could talk about that.
Going back to what you were saying about cricket, did you see the YouTube, it was on Facebook, they created a robot that can beat humans at playing, what is it, where they've got the scone. They sweep it with the brooms.
Oh,
and
curling.
Curling.
A scone is something you eat.
Yeah, this is a stone.
It's stone.
A stone, yeah.
I knew it was something like that. But anyways, they got a robot. They programmed a robot that can beat humans at the game.
Well, because that's just math.
Well,
not just math, but there's a lot of math involved.
There's a lot of math.
Well, they showed the robot, though.
Yeah.
Once they, the human went, all of a sudden the robot went up, the head went up, kind of looked around, saw where the things were, came down, and then all of a sudden started
can calculate the coefficient of friction and
moving the stone, and boom. Every time it was knocking the other opponent right on out, and they were right within the points.
It's geometry. It's pool sharks are usually good at math because it's the geometry involved.
Yeah, that was so cool though. Here, computerized robot beats a team of humans.
And guess what the robot's name is? Curly.
Of course it is.
Curly, the curling robot.
Sydney.
That's a cute little picture. Oh, it doesn't have eyeballs. I should put eyeballs on them. Googly eyes on the front end.
Googly
of
eyes
it.
In the front. Johnny Five is alive. So, there's. It is. getting science fiction-y, what can be done.
Well, look
in
at
the
our
real world. I mean, we've seen computers that play chess and Go and all, and they're, you know, okay, that's all math and that's all calculation and that's all happening in silicon. But now they've gotten so good with servo motors and stuff like that that you can do the physical things. It's
well, look
quite
at
amazing.
In our cars. Our cars now, they've got it in a lot of the cars now that if you get too close to somebody, boom,
yeah.
the collision.
And lane assist, where
yeah.
he keeps you. The first time I rented a car that had both the close keeping or whatever they
yeah.
call it and the lane assist, I got scared because suddenly the wheel was fighting me. And
yep.
You know, I pulled over to the side of the road and we, you know, looked in the manual and, oh, lane assist is on.
Yeah, mine will sit there and it's like, you know, when you go off the side of the road and
yeah.
you hit those bumpity parts.
Yeah.
If I'm off the lane and there's not that bumpity, but all of a sudden with the lane assist, it'll start acting like it is and the car will start.
Right. Well, I was just edging over because there was a car that was also
yeah.
edging over
mm-hmm.
and the wheel was suddenly fighting me. Not hard.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
it was fighting me.
My wife.
I could overcome it, but it was fighting me, and I was worried
yeah.
until I realized, oh, it's got lane assist.
My wife's new car does that, and it wants to keep you dead center in the lane.
Yep.
And when someone on the other side is riding too close to my, or there's a big truck coming, I like to move over a little bit.
Yep.
And it fights me.
Yep.
Because I'm not in the center of the lane anymore.
Yeah, yep.
But
because
then,
of the vacuum.
But then when there's an exit ramp and it sees that white line exiting off, it'll try to follow that,
yeah.
too.
No.
Yeah, I mean, cars do a lot of very cool things. They're not quite self-driving.
Although, if SpaceX can land a rocket on a moving ship in the middle of the ocean,
yeah.
why can't my car drive me to work?
Right.
It's going to be coming to that.
That's coming. It's
yeah.
just,
yeah,
the
I mean,
question
it's a matter of time.
Not, they can drive you to work now. What they can't do is drive you to work safely.
Yeah.
Well, because of the other idiots out there.
Partially because of the other idiots.
Yeah,
and
if every car would talk to every
right.
other car.
The problem with that is that if every car could talk to every other car and they were all self-driving, they would all go at the speed limit, and nobody
yeah.
wants that.
Yeah.
So,
well,
yeah.
the speed limits could be higher because they were all talking with the
right.
the scene in iRobot where the robots attack Will Smith because he's manually driving his car and his boss is yelling, "I hear been manually driving again." That's that you can't do that.
Right. But yeah, I have watched manual car. The problem with manual cars is that we still haven't solved the trolley problem.
Yeah.
Right. So the trolley problem is there's two tracks. One track, there's a person on the track, and if you hit them, they die. The other track, there's five people.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you go?
Which one?
Yeah, which one do you kill?
Which one do you kill? And then the person on the track, the single person is a pregnant woman, and the five people are all in their 80s. And that, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of
scenarios.
Yep. So they, you know, you there are no solutions yet to those problems, to the trolley problem yet. So because they, you know, so it, do I swerve to not hit the dog and therefore run into a tree? I mean, you know, how do you handle those? And there are no solutions to those yet.
I've read about one of the self-driving cars got stuck in a entrance ramp because no one would let it in, and it was too polite,
because
mm-hmm. you if no one lets you in, you just start moving out anyway, and then someone's going to slow down.
Someone's gonna slow down probably Yeah, and again, if every car was self-driving,
yeah.
they would make room for it.
Yep.
But
yep.
when not
adjust.
Every car is self-driving, you have selfish humans who need to be first. They have to be
yep.
first. And I have always lived my life with the thought, if you want to be first, go ahead. I'd rather have you crash in front of me
yeah.
or behind me than on me.
Just me coming here tonight. Today, I was at Dewey and Stone turning onto Maiden. All of a sudden, the light turns red, so I stop. I'm over in the left-hand lane. Two cars on the right-hand side blow right through the red light.
People pay attention to who has a delayed green on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And they remember those, so they know if the light turns red, they can still go because it's not yet green on the other side. The problem is when somebody else knows that their red is already green and they go two,
yep.
Now you've got an accident.
Oh, yeah. Well, or that I see all the time now because that's what I do for a living is driving.
Right.
And the folks that are running red lights or you're sitting at a light that's red and they're tired. Either on the left or right side, doesn't really matter. They're tired of waiting. They don't see any traffic coming. So they go ahead and go right through the red light and hasn't even turned yet.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, the other one I always got a kick out of was someone had to go, a bumper sticker, go ahead and hit me. I need the insurance money.
Oh, yeah.
On an old beat up car. And then when you finally get the brand new car, you're used to jumping red lights and pushing stop signs and you get hit again.
Yep. I used to drive a very old beat up car. It was old and beat up when I got it. And, I let a number of people drive it who beat it up even worse. I never had an accident in that car. Oh, that's not true. I never had an accident that was reported in that car. But that was back in the days when we had.
And her name is Amelia.
Long before. Yeah. Long before Amelia. And she was not an accident. This was in the can of worms days.
Yeah.
Oh.
I never had a problem in the can of worms. And I realized it's because people saw me coming and got out of my way.
A lot of folks, they don't know what they're missing when we talk about the can of worms.
Oh.
Because that was definitely a free-for-all
was
back in the day, folks.
Yeah.
And then it was bad enough during good weather.
Oh.
When it was winter weather. We used to hide in the back of the car when my dad was going through there because we didn't want to look. We thought we were all going to die.
Yep. It was pretty amazing. But I said, yeah. I never understood what people were talking about until I got a new car.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, nobody was afraid of me anymore.
Out for the glory.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. At any rate, that's... self-driving cars will come.
Yeah.
And
computers are getting a lot smaller and a lot more efficient.
The other problem with self-driving cars is that right now they're vulnerable to hacking.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to solve that problem before we go too much farther.
Yeah.
Well, regular cars that are internet connected are hackable as well. And mm-hmm. we have to deal with that at some point. You know, it's the same question we've always had on the internet. We have people who create something and don't think of security. And then all of a sudden, they're unsecured and nobody wants to use them. You got to think of security first. And the problem is you can't think of everything.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so there's a real issue with that. We have a question in the chat, what do you think of mini PCs? I would like to buy one for Christmas. Windows or Linux? Tired of the Windows dance every few years. Mini PCs, well, there are several categories of mini PCs. Some of them are just small, regular-sized boxes. Some of them are small, lower-powered boxes. In either case, for the high-powered boxes, Windows is acceptable. It'll run fine on them. For the lower power boxes, I would use Linux or Chrome OS mm-hmm. Flex. And I think mini PCs are an excellent choice for a lot of purposes. Often you can buy NUCs. Intel had a product called the NUC, the next unit of computing. And it's a mini PC. And they're ludicrously inexpensive. You can buy an i5 processor with, 24 gigs of RAM for a couple of hundred bucks on eBay as people, were using them in businesses and now they're being sold off. They're used, but they're still in good shape. Or you could buy them new. Many, just brush my teeth. I can't do a thing with them. Many mini PCs are excellent second or even first computers. They make good desktops, particularly, like I said, if you use them for Linux. Look, Linux and Chrome OS Flex don't tax a computer as much as Windows does. So if you have a lower-end device, like an i5 or an i3, Windows or Chrome OS Flex is a much better choice. They run faster than Windows will on the same device.
And the one thing that you got me hooked on, which now that i3 that I was talking about, you know, that's got 64 megs of memory.
Yeah.
So yes. I'm putting on Xubuntu.
Mm-hmm.
I think Xubuntu looks very much Windows-like. You can still have the button down the lower left-hand corner, which we're used to. You click on that, it'll open up the taskbar like the old Windows 7. You'll see all the programs. It even has a description of what each program will do, because like we've talked about for the past few months, is Linux has so many other free programs that you can do literally everything with it.
Yep.
And there's a lot of the software that you might already use. Oh, there's also a Linux version. And it's very easy to install. You can go to YouTube and learn how to install Linux, how to upgrade different software packages, and how to do various things. It might just take an afternoon of your time sitting down and going through various videos, but you can learn a lot because people are making it very user-friendly, and it is a user-friendly system.
Ubuntu is a version of Linux. And it can have any front end you like. The beauty of Linux is you're not limited to what Windows thinks your front end should be or what Apple thinks your front end should be. Put any front end you want on it. Change it around any way you like. Do anything you want with it. Xubuntu comes with XFCE, which is stable, light, and very configurable. Mm-hmm. But you can change that if you want. You can put Mint on it or Cinnamon or, you know, whatever your front end of choice is at a later point. But I much prefer XFCE because it is very lightweight.
Yes.
It is very stable, and it is really easy to use. And so Xubuntu comes with it already. I don't have to screw around. Just install Xubuntu. Boom, I'm up and running. I'm done. And it's it works on desktops and laptops and netbooks and just all kinds of things. And so,
my Raspberry Pi.
Yep, it's free. You can download it at xubuntu.org. XUBUNTU.org. Again, it's absolutely free. There's a huge community that will be happy to help you out if you've got a question. It runs on dang near anything.
Yeah, you can just go to this. There's an app there that's called Snap. And Snap, you open it up, and basically that's like the Google Store.
Well, there are three stores,
yeah,
really.
There's Snap,
Flatpak, and the regular App Store.
Yeah.
And all three of those are available under Xubuntu, on any Ubuntu, and you can install pretty much anything you like on any of those without a problem.
Yeah.
So I have a mix of regular and Snap programs on my system.
You can go between the two.
Yeah, without any trouble at all. So if you're looking for a version of Linux to run on your machine, Xubuntu, I think, is an excellent choice. Your mileage may vary, but that's the way that should work.
I found an article at Tom's Guide on mini PCs.
Yeah.
And they have the Raspberry Pi, and they have the Mac Studio.
How is that mini?
Because it's only 7 inches square.
Okay.
But it's a $2,000 computer or a $50 Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, right.
I guess.
Have they started up doing the Raspberry Pis again?
Sorry?
Have they even started back up doing the Raspberry Pis?
No, they had an interview with the guy who created them, and he said by this time next year, they should all be back. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to take a year to get them.
Yeah.
It means they'll be ramping up over the next year to the point where a year from now, there won't be any more question. You'll just be able to get what you want. So that's coming. We got a question in the stream that we'll get to when we come back. That music tells us that we are going to take a quick little break, but don't go too far because we're coming back. We do have a question in Twitch, and we'll come back to that in just a couple of minutes. But we're going to take a quick break. Back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a couple of minutes.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have a question on Twitch. I have an old Cynics Picnic. I like the name. I have an old laptop running Windows Vista. You've caused Dave actual physical pain. Remain calm, Dave. I'm trying to upload some things to it using a thumb drive, but the computer isn't seeing the thumb drive. Do you have any advice?
Yeah, you deserve it.
No. Do you own a sledgehammer? If you're not seeing the thumb drive, it's a couple of things that could be causing it. First, you're using Vista. Secondly, it may be that the thumb drive is formatted using a format that is not recognized by Vista.
I got a perfect, better solution.
So it comes from, so it depends on where that drive came from. It says, my mom gave it to me, had nothing to do with any of it.
Yeah.
Blame it on your mother. Nice.
Yeah.
So it could be GPT instead of MBR.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It could be UFS instead of NTFS.
Yep. Right.
So there's, especially if it's a newer flash drive, it's probably in a newer disk format that Vista just can't understand.
Vista simply doesn't understand.
Yeah, it won't. It's too old.
So you can do one of two things. You can, one of three things, the third involving a sledgehammer. One thing you could do is to, if it's on your network and you can see it on your network, you could upload the files to a different computer and copy them over via the network. The other thing you could do is to get another thumb drive, format it on the Vista machine, and then using a different computer, copy all the data from the one thumb drive to the other thumb drive that Vista can read.
Or put it out in the middle of the driveway, drive over it as you're going to the store to buy a newer modern computer.
Or alternately, do you shoot skeet?
Yeah, that'd be fun.
That would be more fun. We used to do that with old hard drives.
Yeah. There are occasionally...
Pull the platters out and use them.
There are occasionally programs that still only run on the old OSs. We have a customer with an ancient plotter, $100,000 plotter, and they still need XP. And we've got another a sign company printer.
Yeah.
They have to use DOS running Apple Talk.
Wow. That's ancient.
That's
ancient.
Or buy a new $100,000 printer.
That ain't happening.
Ooh, Cynics Picnic says he and a friend used to destroy old computers and they've got a videotape of 8 hours of footage. You need a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
You need a YouTube channel.
Or just take it. My other suggestion is if you have a second story window, you open that up.
Push.
And just leading it out there and just see how long it takes to hit the ground.
Oh, it's a scientific thing.
Yeah.
Write it down. The only difference between screwing around and science is writing it down.
That's exactly right. There are companies out there. There are places out there, I should say, that have shooting ranges where you can go and shoot old computers.
Yep.
I cannot tell you how cathartic that actually is.
There are some scientific channels. I'm looking now. How many computers does it take to stop a bullet?
Nice.
MythBusters did a couple of things on bulletproof. What is considered bulletproof?
Right.
So what I loved is that they found that it was it eight? Eight or ten pizza boxes in the warming bag is bulletproof.
Right. All right. Yeah.
For handguns.
Oh, okay.
That's the other big thing, too. Yeah, what size
caliber?
What caliber do you use? Bring out that 50 cal and nothing.
Nothing. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Rochester, New York. What's up, Jim?
Hi there. Say, I'm having a little trouble with icons on my computer.
With what?
A lot of them are just turning into little white symbols. And what I used to be able to do was go to the, the splat key or the home screen key there. Are you hearing me okay?
I am not. I don't know about these guys, but no, my hearing aids are not picking up.
Is it icons on the desktop, or is it any, or is it icons in a window?
It's both.
Okay.
It's both. Let me just hit another button here and see if this will help you.
Okay. It's both.
Usually this gives you an echo.
Yeah, we're getting a bad echo now.
Okay, I'll turn that back off then. Okay, I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on here.
Well, Steve can hear you, so you're fine. And the fault is not yours, Jim. The fault is not yours. The fault is mine. My hearing aids. I apologize. But Steve can hear you because he's still got youngest ears in the room anyway. So go ahead.
Well, what I usually do is I hit the home button and hit the all apps and copy whatever symbol they have there for the given application, whatever that icon is. Pull it off into a space on the side of the window. In other words, I don't have the full screen on. I have like the half screen. So you just pull it into an empty space, and then that will be usually a working...
Yeah, it's reloading the icon image from the original source, basically, is what that's telling
it
to do.
Happen. But some of those are even white, just like funny-looking symbols. Is there something maybe in my, some fundamental application that I don't have up to date?
It's probably something in the icon cache. I'm going to post a link on 10 different fixes for icons showing up blank. Yeah, and it's a couple of them are resetting the icon cache. Let's see, updating your display driver. What operating system is it running?
It's one Windows 10. It's an i7 machine, laptop.
Adding custom icons back again.
Sorry?
So the icon is a file that it's pointing to inside of Windows. And so the system file checker may help. If it's a corrupt file, then it can't load the icon properly. So there's a there's a couple of different things you can do to rebuild that icon. And make sure all the Windows system files are loading properly. Let me press.
So the first thing you would run would be that file check.
Yeah, this the SFC system file checker.
Yeah.
And to see if there's any damaged Windows system files, and that's why it can't load the application icons. Is it application icons or shortcuts or documents or all?
Usually, it's an application.
Okay. So, and that's odd because the applications usually have the icon embedded in themselves.
Well, I didn't know if I had like a driver problem or something like that.
It could be the display driver. But the big one I'm seeing now is resetting the icon cache.
Yeah, where will I find that?
It's two or three command lines you have to run.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and I've posted a link from Help Desk Geek. and this is for Windows 10. Yeah, there's a couple of reports inside Microsoft, too, and they send you into the registry, and I don't like that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, SFC is probably the first thing to try running and see if that reloads any corrupt system file.
Okay, fellas. Thanks very much.
Yep.
All right, thanks. I am sorry that I couldn't hear you. I apologize. That's just on me. Okay, we had another question on Twitch again, oddly enough. Mm-hmm. I recently installed Ubuntu on a 10-year-old Dell Latitude that Microsoft abandoned with Windows 10. It runs like a champ. I'm loving it. You're so right about Linux. Yes, we are, Wayne. One annoyance I'm trying to work around is why does Google keep asking me to verify I'm not a robot in order to browse? Okay, there are a couple of things that will cause that to happen. One is if your computer is constantly sending multiple requests to Google, it gets suspicious and asks you to verify that you're really a human. The second thing is if you're using a VPN, you will often get Google asking if you're a human because most robots use VPNs. If you're using a proxy server that is unknown to Google, it will ask you if you're a robot. If you're using a DNS file, a DNS server, rather, that Google doesn't know about, it will ask you if you're a robot. And if you do a lot of automated queries, it will constantly ask you if you're a robot, and that's the deal. It's generally speaking one of those things. Google is trying very hard to kill it's got to be that machine running some sort. I would definitely run your security tango on that. Make sure that you don't have something happening in the background that's...
For a long time, those captures were to train Google's AI object recognition.
Right.
Okay.
Right. There was no wrong answer.
Yeah.
It was just a series of right answers. It was crowdsourcing the actual reality. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Webster, New York. What's up, Jim?
Hey there. I may have a solution for that icon issue.
Oh, good.
Oh, good.
Okay, first of all, run the security tango. Let's make sure the machine's clean.
Uh-huh.
Second, run a program called tweaking.com.
What's it called?
Tweaking, TWEAKING.com.
Okay.
And you can get the advanced system tweaker.
Nice.
Absolutely. And that resets the whole ball of wax with Windows.
Interesting.
I have used it probably several hundred times, and we have had really good luck with getting icons back.
Well, good.
Good. Excellent.
So it looks like it's Visual Basic scripts that do the register change for you. So you know that they're typing the right command.
Right, in the right place.
In the right place, yeah.
Yep, absolutely. It's foolproof.
Perfect. Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome. You have a good day.
You too. That's Jim from Webster helping Jim from Rochester. It's the Jim Network. All the Jims together. Very nice. Thank you. Thank you all. I'm going to read this news item.
Okay.
Code sleuths at a company called MISK, M-Y-S-K, are challenging Apple's vaunted focus on privacy. The developers claim Apple's anonymous usage data for some in-house apps includes a Directory Services Identifier, or DSID, uniquely linking to your Apple ID and iCloud data. Apple could potentially use this DSID to pinpoint your App Store browsing habits, according to MISK. This seemingly contradicts Apple's assertion that none of the data are personally identifying and appears to extend into iOS 16. The researchers previously shared findings that iOS 14.6 sends large volumes of first-party app activity to Apple, even if you completely disable device analytics or otherwise limit collection. This includes your iPhone model, keyboard languages, and other details that could theoretically be used to fingerprint your device. Users filed a class action lawsuit against Apple after MISK published its privacy data. Just what Apple sees isn't clear because Apple encrypts the usage data and it isn't necessarily processing personal and general information together. The problem is, you might guess, is that Apple doesn't detail its analytics collection practices. There is a concern Apple might not be honoring its privacy promises even if the data gathering is limited. Are you worried about what Apple knows about you? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. The internet has become a matter, a game of who do you trust? And you have to decide to trust somebody if you're going to be on the internet. You trust Apple, you trust Google, you trust Microsoft, you trust somebody just to get on the internet.
It used to be the lesser of two evils. Now it's you want horrible evil, or you want really, really bad evil, or
right.
there isn't much lesser anymore.
Right, and remember, the lesser of two evils is still evil.
Yeah, you want John P. Jones or Joan P. Johns?
Right, exactly. One of the things that I've done recently, last week as a matter of fact, is I installed the DuckDuckGo browser to my computer, to my phone. And one of the things it has, and this is in beta, and we talked about this last week, it might be a problem. And so this is beta. I'm not saying you should install this, but I installed it. And it's called App Tracking Protection. And in the last 7 days, it has blocked 9,610 attempts from 11 apps to track me. Now, some of them are completely legitimate, like Gas Buddy wants to know where I am. Well, if I want to find the closest gas station to me, the cheapest gas price that's close to me, it has to know where I am. I get that. But TikTok doesn't need to know where I am. Pandora doesn't need to know where I am. My Orbi doesn't really need to know where I am. So there's a lot of that stuff going on, and it's opened my eyes to how many apps are trying to track me for really no legitimate reason.
Yep.
And I'm pretty impressed by the stuff that's in there. It's just again, you know, who do you trust? And the problem is, none of the programs that are tracking me were installed with my phone. They're all programs I added.
That's one nice thing about the Google phone.
Right. Right. So I do know that none of the installed apps are tracking me. Well, look, Google tracks you for a lot of reasons. One is it's got to know where you are so it knows where to send your data. I mean, it knows where you are.
Yeah, it's got
by any phone knows where you are by what cell towers you're near. That's you're not going to get away from
life.
That. Yeah. That's right. If you're going to use your phone, they have to know where you are, and they will know where you are. So I'm not saying they don't track you at all. I'm saying they don't, that it's not, it doesn't seem to be tracking me in an untoward manner. Gas Buddy doesn't need to know a lot of the data that it's looking for, like my email address. It doesn't need to know that. I'm not signed into them. I'm never going to sign into them. I don't need to know that.
No, you just need the app. Like I just checked, I was using it for find the cheapest gas. Like right now, I go to BJ's, and believe it or not, between the BJ's in Greece and the BJ's in Henrietta, there's like a 10-cent difference.
Yep.
So you know, you go where it's
20 cents or more.
And sometimes it can be. I mean, but just between BJ's right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But here, so Gas Buddy wants to know my device model and my unique identifier.
Mm-mm.
And my network carrier.
Mm-mm.
And my email address. You don't need to know any of that. And all of these are coming from a program called Urban Star. What is it called? Urban Airship. Gas Buddy uses it. Pandora uses it.
And that's Orbi often what it. Happens is it's a monetizer that many other apps include.
Yeah. Right.
So they don't have to write monetization themselves.
Right. So, yeah. And I am very pleased, honestly, with the DuckDuckGo app. And it's a web browser. I don't use it as my web browser. But it's on the phone, and I've it uses my battery more. I find I have to recharge my phone every couple of days instead of every like 3 or 4 days. But so what? It's, you know, it's protecting me from all of that stuff. I'm perfectly fine with that.
One thing we should probably talk about since we got a few minutes here. Monday is Cyber Monday.
Yes, it is.
And a lot of folks love, and I'm just as guilty, the convenience of shopping from home on your computer. But folks, be careful of where you're going. You know, don't just automatically take a link and, you know, follow it, because it could wind up, you know, some other site looks very authentic.
Yep.
But it could be very bogus, steal your money, and you're not going to get it back.
Right.
So, you know, when you're typing it in, double check, you know, the URLs, make sure that little lock is there, that it is a secure site.
Although that's not as big a flag anymore because the bad guys are using
it. Right, everybody's using it. Yeah. But here's what you need to do. First, today, not wait until Monday, today, write down all of your information, your bank information, like the phone number that you would normally call for your bank.
Mm-hmm.
Write down the URL for your bank and the same for the main companies that you go to. And remember that none of these companies, well, banks do, but none of the regular companies will ever, ever email you anything, ever. And do not click. If you get a notice that says there's a problem with your account, do not click the link.
Mm-mm.
Simply do not. You've already written down the phone number to your bank. Call them and ask them. Or go to the website of your bank if you do online banking and look at your account there rather than clicking on the link in the email. Because I promise you, the convenience of that click is hiding a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
So do not do it. Also, no legitimate company will ever ask you for a gift card. Let me repeat that.
Yeah.
No legitimate company will ever ask you for a gift card.
They are gifts that you want to give.
Right.
Not pay bills.
Right. If you get somebody saying, send us gift cards, that's a huge red flag.
Mm-hmm.
It is a scam, and do not do it.
And if you get into, here's the other thing, folks. If you wind up getting into one of these endless loops, no matter what you try to do to get out, you know, and it's just not working, it's just got you in this countless, you know, regurgitation of going to the website. Best thing you can do is reach down, hit that power button, and shut the machine off.
One of the things that I on the Mac, Command Q quits the program you're in.
Right.
There's got to be something similar for Windows. Is it Alt F4, was it?
Alt F4 will often kill any program.
You're right. And so a lot of times when these fake messages come up, they hide the close box. So there's no way to close it.
Right. Yep.
But you should be able to quit the program. And if all else fails, turn the computer off. Yeah. We're also getting into the point where fake shipping notices are going to start coming.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is UPS. There's a problem with your shipment. Click here to verify your address. And then once you verify your address, they can redirect your shipment to them.
Right.
Because it's not UPS.
Right.
Or whatever.
One of the things you need to write down is the address of UPS and the email address. And if there's a phone number of UPS and DHL and pretty much all of those companies so that you have them at hand. And here's the other thing. If you didn't request something, I would suspect that the shipping notice is bogus. So start getting careful now.
They didn't make a mistake, and you should tell them of their mistake. They are trying to trick you to giving up your information.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. It's nice to be nice. Don't be nice. Don't be nice here. This is not a nice situation. All right. That music tells us that we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. It is 58 minutes after the hour. You have just spent 2 hours with the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites. Please go vote in the poll. And we're done for another week. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?